Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly radio show where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. On the show, your host Garrison Reed sits down with Honus Honus of Man Man. Ryan Kattner, aka Honus Honus, discusses their debut record, the impact of member changes on Six Demon Bag, and the challenge of covering a classic.
And it's not like I hung up a flyer in the local coffee shop for people who ate paint chips as a child, apply only.
Man Man's 2004 Man in a Blue Turban with a Face nearly slipped under the radar. The band's chaotic yet spellbinding live show caught the eyes of the blogsphere and Pitchfork, thus forwarding readers to the record, which was recorded over a month in the band's hometown of Philadelphia. It couples the band's rhythmic intensity with emotionally frank lyrics. Here's a snippet of Van Helsing's boombox from the band's upcoming full-length, Six Demon Bag. Sophomore record, Six Demon Bag, has a release date of February 21st, 2006.
How did the band record all the elements present on The Man in a Blue Turban with a Face?
I love that title. It was real low budget. It was very guerrilla style. So we did basic tracking with drums and keyboards in a studio. And that's actually where most of the money went, just to get a real studio to do that stuff. And then a lot of the other stuff we did in a separate home studio of the engineer, Bill Moriarty. But, I mean, some of the things like grand pianos and that sort of stuff we had to kind of work around. So I've said it before in different interviews, but for the grand pianos, we had to break into... Well, not physically break. We had to covertly get into a music school here in Philly and use some of their resources. And we only had a couple of hours to do it, and it all worked out, but it was kind of stressful. Do you have any specific questions about some of the stuff that's on the first record?
I guess the children's choir?
The children's choir was interesting. I had some friends who were teachers at a preschool around the corner from my house. And I asked them if they could get a couple of the kids in the class to learn this melody for Proving Monster, which is really simple. And I was going to go back in a week and a half later and record them there on the spot. And the process was real simple, you know. I showed up with a boombox and a song. We showed up with a portable recorder. And I was fortunate because instead of there being four or five kids, there was 30 kids who knew the song. So it was a little creepy, a little cultish.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids definitely didn't have an attention span past two times through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were freaked out by my mustache.
How was the reaction to the song initially from them?
From them? I mean, they were into it. I mean, kids love to make noise. And if you can hear in the recording, there's definitely one kid in there who's on his own. He's doing his own melody.
Yeah.
And it's pretty awesome. Maybe when he grows up a little bit, enjoy Man Man.
The first record has a lot of elements that can't be duplicated in the live show. Was there hesitation to make another record with all those studio only elements?
No, you know, it's funny. Yeah. Really, at this point where we're at, it's just a matter of economics. I mean, I know a lot of talented musicians that we could bring aboard to flush out stuff, but it's just, at this level, it's just impossible for us to travel with any more than what we have. Like, I would love to have more violin stuff, more horns, more female backing vocals, instead of having us on backing vocals. Actually, ideally, we could find a girl who can play violin, saxophone, flute, keyboards, percussion, and has a great voice, then we'd love to have that member in the band. And also could put up with...
the rest of the band.
The rest of the band. and didn't want to be paid much. Then, yeah, we definitely would add that to the band. You know, it's one of those things, too, when a lot more people are going to hear a record than will ever see us play live. So, you know, the way I feel about it is, why not make a record that best represents what, you know, you feel the songs are about? I mean, when we translate it into a live setting, we obviously have concerns about that as well, but we want the song to represent something else, too, with, mm-hmm. like the grit and the energy that I think are in the studio recordings, but they come across differently. If I hear a record and I think to myself, wow, there's no way in hell anyone could ever pull that off live, mm-hmm. I go see it and I'm like, wow, they pulled it off live. I guess there is a way in hell.
Yeah.
Then that's pretty astounding. But for the most part, when I see bands that sound exactly like the records, it's just kind of boring to me. Unless I can tell that it's destroying every ounce of their energy to make their live show sound exactly like their records.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel like if we had enough people on board to get our records across exactly like they're recorded, watch out. I mean, I think that live show would be awesome.
Yeah.
They have 30 kids. Have R&B singers, pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
Someone on stage only to smash a bottle. Someone else on stage, their only role is to throw 30 spoons at the wall and scream like a punch into a coffee can.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. I would see that show over and over again. Anyway.
There's an amazing amount of excitement within the band about what you're doing live. Has that always been present?
For us, the challenge when we're playing live is, can we actually make it through a set without dropping the ball? You know, is Ryan going to vomit halfway through the set because he can't scream anymore? You know, or are Cougar strings going to break and then he's screwed because he has to play the guitar? I mean, you've seen our set. You know how there is no downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we have downtime, we feel like we're playing a bad show.
Yeah.
So it's fun to kind of psych each other out when we're playing a show, because we can look over at one another and we know where that person needs to be as far as where he needs to be to pick up the slide whistle or the accordion or the drumstick. So it's great when we can look at that person and try to screw them up.
Mm-hmm.
Because the look of terror on that person's face when they realize, oh no, someone hit my sticks. What am I going to have to do? It's pretty twisted.
The new record features somewhat new cast of musicians. Did this kind of cleaning help or hinder the songwriting process?
I think it was very refreshing. I mean, the old crew that was aboard was definitely awesome and very capable. But, you know, the new guys, I feel like they're more in tune with what's going on. So, I mean, it was a little stressful at first because half of the band departed right before we went into studio, so that I had to bring in new guys, and they had to become acquainted with the songs. A couple of the guys had actually played in the band before, in various capacities. But the most exciting thing about it was playing with a new drummer. It was Chris Powell, and he's such an amazing drummer, and he really helped out things and made things really fresh. And he had some great ideas that he brought to the table. The recording process, I was hoping that it'd be a lot easier this time around, and it was a lot easier. I mean, it wasn't real laid back or anything, but we had a lot more time too. We had 3 months over the summer to do it, whereas for the first record it was only a month, mm-hmm. even less than. So that allowed us to go. We went to the studio with half the songs on the record were songs that we were playing live already. So we had the comfort of being able to go in the studio with that stuff. And from what the previous members, when they left, the new guys who stepped in, they kind of got to refresh these songs we've been playing for a while. They got to write their own parts and such. And Steven, who was on the first record, and he was part of the touring band before, he actually stayed on board to finish the record with us. And it's not like I hung up a flyer in the local coffee shop for people who ate paint chips as a child, apply only. So while the record was being recorded, I was also putting together the new touring band.
Yeah. As far as song structure, I know the first song that's been released, the Van Helsing Boombox, it seems like that song is a lot more tight than most of the first record.
Yeah, I mean, what I think is different about the record is I feel that as far as the songwriting goes, I feel like it's been honed in and sharpened a little more. I don't feel like we've sacrificed any of the things that make a man-man song, because I'm really not sure what makes a man-man song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just feel like we were hot and we hit it, whereas with the first record, you know, we were definitely scattered. We were all over the place, because, I mean, that album was recorded in dozens of places. It was like we only had a couple hours to do these elements here, or these horn parts here, and this person had to be on a plane to go somewhere else. You know, it was definitely maddening. So, I don't know. I mean, I think we're a pop band. I think we got the hits on the first and new record, so. You know, the hits in, like, You're in My World.
Yeah. You're also working on an EP, Lot Lizards.
One of them is a cover, and two of the other songs were songs we wanted to put on the full length, but we realized it probably would have been too much.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been sensory overload, I think.
And the Etta James song you covered
is I'd Rather Be Blind.
And why did you choose that song?
It's a great song, and I was a little hesitant to cover it, just because I never really saw myself covering a song. It's a great song, and I thought there were a lot of elements to it that I kind of felt attached to, and I felt that we could pull off. You know, it's a song about heartbreak and loss. And these are definitely elements that are in our songs, whether or not you want to hear them or not.
Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guests today, Man Man, can be found on their website, wearemanman.com. Music samples in this show are from their record, Six Demon Bag, available on Ace Foo Records, February 2006. For information on this release, visit acefoo.com. For information, including a transcription of this interview, please visit IndieInterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in this production, send your thoughts to IndieInterviews@IndieInterviews.com. Thanks again. See you next week. Nothing is the only thing you ever seem to have. When anything